Welcome to another edition of Simons Says, a podcast devoted to conversationalists and the curious-minded. Here's your host, me, the follically challenged Dave Simons, certified financial planner and all-around nice guy. Hello again, everybody. Well, I'm going to start off with something that, I don't know, might be a little provocative, all right? The first time I ever laid eyes on my real biological father was when I was a young teenager. I'm going to say about 13 or 14 years old. And it wasn't in person. It was an old black and white photo. Let that kind of waft over you for a second. What do I mean the first time I ever saw my real father was in a photo? Well, I'll explain. So on my mom's side, we used to have kind of an annual small little family reunion every Thanksgiving in a small little city called Minneapolis, Kansas. You can Google it. In the middle of nowhere, just north of Salina. And that was kind of an annual thing. So our family gathered there, and I'm going to say this is in the mid-1970s, 75, 76, something like that. And somebody, and I don't remember who this was for the life of me, but it was a relative who said, "Hey, Dave, look at this photo. See if you recognize anybody." So I looked at it. It's a black and white photo, and there are three people in it. There's a young couple and this toddler. I don't even think he was 1 year old. He was sitting on one of their laps. And I looked at the little kid, and I'm like, I have no idea who that is. And I looked at the man. I don't know who that is. And I looked at the woman, and it's like, that's my mom from like a dozen years ago or so. And then the light bulb went off, and I realized, oh my gosh, that's got to be me, and that's got to be the man. I don't know him other than that's got to be my biological father. His name was never discussed in our family. Now, by this time, my mom had remarried, and the person I consider my dad was there at the reunion. He was dad to me. They got married when I was about 4 years old or so. But this was such a bolt of lightning to me that I had never thought about this man, really, like I said, never discussed. And I looked at it and I got kind of this excitement about it, this glee. I had to go show my mom. So I go, mom, look at this. Look at this picture. And I didn't know what I was expecting. I wasn't expecting this kind of response. She looked at it, no real emotion. And she gave a one word response, and it was, "Yuck," turned and walked away. And I didn't know what to do with that. And again, it was really never spoken of again until many decades later, until recently. I have come to learn that that yuck was a bit of an underreaction. It was a bit of an understatement. This is going to be a very, very compelling episode, I think, for a lot of you. I'm a journalist at heart, as many of you know. That's what I used to do before I got into the financial services industry about 30 years ago or so. So the journalistic storytelling is part of my DNA, and that's why I've really enjoyed doing these longer form podcasts that have nothing to do with my chosen field of work. It goes back to wanting to tell a story and getting down to the bottom of things that I think are really compelling. And that's really what's going to happen in this episode. This one will be different. It will be unlike anything that I've done yet and may do for a long, long time, because we are going to dig into some family dynamics. Now, some of you will say, "Wow, that's really some story this guy's telling." Others will say, "I thought I was the only one." They're telling a similar story to our family. And I'll leave you with this before I introduce the guest today. We all know that one little incident can happen. It might take seconds. It could play out over a couple of days. But one incident, one little event can have an impact on generations that follow. Sometimes it's a positive one. Many times it's not so positive. And that's really sort of at the heart of this episode. There's really only one person who can properly tell the story, who was behind that reaction of yuck. and all of the things that came afterward. And that is the woman in that picture, who's kind of got a long name, Karen Hall Simons Finkelstein Gummersbach. The woman's been married a few times. We'll also learn a little bit about that. Yeah, I'm talking about my own mother. That's what I call her. And that's who is the guest on today's Simon Says podcast. So without further ado, my own mother. Hi, Mom.
Hi, son.
Oh, my gosh.
Yeah, but it's all true.
And we're going to find out a lot more. Go ahead.
We are. And I must say that in those long names, there's not a middle name in there because my mother never gave the girls a middle name because it was hard enough to get one name. They did not want to figure out two names for everybody.
Well, I knew that about you, but your sisters don't have middle names either?
No, all three sisters. No, no, no. Well, no, my mom doesn't either. So there you go. It's kind of a family thing.
See, what they're going to find out today is I'm going to learn things about my family today along with them.
Yeah.
That's kind of the family dynamics of this. Yeah. But before we get into this, I know a lot of people are looking and going, wait a minute. Isn't Dave in his 60s? That's his mother? Now, let me say this. I always used to like that even to this day, as an adult, when people say, man, your mom looks so young. She looks great. I know. Thank you. It's a genetic thing, except maybe for me, but it's great. I don't think I've ever told you this.
Uh-oh.
I hated that when I was younger.
Oh.
Especially like as a teenager. No teenager wants to hear their friends compliment their parents or their mother. Like, whoa, that's your mom? Wow, she looks so young. I know. Stop it. It's so tiring. I hated that, but it's true.
I'm sorry.
It's true.
It's so, okay now?
It is great now.
Okay.
It's fine.
Okay.
It's wonderful. Okay. So you are 80. What does that sound like to you?
I'm going to live it. I mean, I'm going to live it because, you know, I've been through hell and back a few times in my life, and I feel great about it, even though I've been through a lot.
Yep.
And even though I was struck down 45 years ago with RA, with a bunch of joint
RA,
placements.
You better say what that is for people who don't know what
RA is. Rheumatoid arthritis. Mm-hmm. Yeah, 45 years ago. So we'll get into that. But I will admit to you something kind of along the same lines. I never tell anybody to this day how old my oldest child is.
Well, secret's out, 61. There you go.
Yeah, oh my God, I'm 80. So there you go. So
well, you have.
We'll get to that.
You have another son who's in his late 50s,
yes.
My brother.
Yes.
What's going to happen when you have three kids in their 60s? I mean, that means you're getting up there.
I will, and I probably will experience that. I certainly hope so because I intend to live to be at least 90 plus.
Okay.
So, Heather, your sister. I'm gonna make it to 90 or over. Yeah.
Well, if there is anyone who can, it would be you, and because you're very resilient, as we're gonna find out. So I want to start with something that is not the most pleasant thing, but that's where we have to start because it goes into the intro that I talked about. So people can do the math. Well, Dave's 61, his mom's 80. Oh, a teenage mom. Yes, you were. not that you wanted to be.
No.
So let's start, and I'm going to let you tell the story in however you want to tell it. But we're starting in the fall of 1961. Tell me where you were, why you were there, and what happened.
I was going to college at the College of Emporia in Emporia, Kansas. I'm from Kansas, born in Wichita. And my mother, and we'll probably get to that, had my entire life pretty much made decisions for me. Came from a great family, a wonderful family, faith-based, and that sort of thing. But you did what she said. You know, she was a good mom, and you followed, what she said that you should do. And I wanted to go to secretarial school right out of high school. And she said, no, you're going to go to college. And so she even picked the college for me. And I wanted to go to K-State. You're going to College of Emporia. So I ended up at College of Emporia. I believe it was probably homecoming or something like that. And I was in a parade and there was a bunch of girls in the car and we were like, you know, driving down the road and this fella came up, big college guy, and he was kind of flirting with the girls in the car, ended up flirting with me. I wanted nothing to do with him. I wasn't interested. But they said to me, oh, he's a college guy and he's really interested in you. I thought, well, college guy interested in me. I'm just a little farm girl, you know, from outside of Wichita.
Had you had a relationship with a boy in high school
Never.
At all? Never. Okay, so you, no experience
Never.
Here.
Never.
Okay.
Never. I was going steady with a guy in high school, and that was it. Mm-hmm. I mean, I maybe kissed a few times, maybe, but that was it. And we never talked about sex with my mom and dad. It was just not a subject that we ever approached in any way, shape, or form. So when the parade was over, and I'm not saying it was that day, probably a few days later, I don't remember. And, you know, this is a story that I've never told anybody,
right,
but to you.
Right.
A year or two ago, we sat down and we talked about this. And it came from me wanting to talk about it after all that stuff was going on in the TV, remember, with
Wine? Oh, the Me Too movement.
The Me Too this Me Too movement and stuff like that. And I will stop and say right now, I will tell you, you don't talk about it. You don't tell anybody about it. You are so ashamed and you think, I could have got out of that. You know, how was I not able to get out of the situation? But I wasn't. You will do anything to get out of the situation. And I went out with this fella. And sure enough, something horrible happened. I cannot say his name to this day. I cannot even say the word. And you can probably say the word because I can't even say the word.
It starts with an R. Is that what you're saying?
Yes.
Yeah.
Yes.
Well, it's rape. Now, they didn't have the term date rape back then.
No.
As I've said, since you told me, and folks, she just said it. Were you going to go to your grave with that information?
Yes.
Okay, because
yes.
You just told me this a couple of years ago, and I was floored and devastated.
Yes.
It was outside of a Panera in the Chesterfield Valley.
Yes.
You wanted to come clean with it. Why?
Because when all that was on TV and women were coming forward and saying, but I never told anybody. And they had dealt with this for their entire life. Some maybe 2 years, some maybe 20, 25, 30, 40 years had never dealt with it. And I thought, you know what? We have to start telling people. We have to be heard. We have to let people know this goes on. And why are we as a victim? And I'm not a victim. I don't ever consider myself a victim. But we have to be able to share it with somebody so we can get it out. Mm-hmm. And I've just lived with this. And I just felt that you needed to know who your real father was. I even preface this by saying to you, if you have any kind of a relationship with him right now, I don't want to step in there. And I know that you've talked on the phone a couple of times to him, and that's about it. But I never saw him after we separated. 5 years of abuse. Years of abuse.
We will get to that.
That's
what I want to get to. So, well, first of all, I think people have already assumed what happened. That you got pregnant that one time.
Yes.
That was it.
Yes.
So you find out you're pregnant and you do what with that information?
I could not call my parents. I could not call my mother. Can you imagine? I wrote a letter home and sent it. Can you imagine opening a letter from your child saying that you were pregnant?
Yeah, you're 18. You're
just
freshman
left home.
In college, right?
I had just left home. And, you know, a few months gone and to get that letter. So they called me. And again, did they ask me what I wanted? Did they ask me what my choices were? You didn't really have your choices in those days because a lot of people ended up going to their auntie's house, you know, and having the child. I mean, that's what you heard. I didn't have a choice. My mother said to me, your dad and I have talked about this and we will come up there at Thanksgiving and you will get married. She didn't know the person. She didn't know anything about him. I didn't know anything about him. I wasn't afraid of him, you know.
But they didn't know necessarily the circumstances that you had been sexually assaulted.
No.
They thought you went out on a date.
I'm sure.
You fooled around.
I'm sure.
That happened.
Oh, I'm sure. And it was never talked about.
Right.
My parents went to their grave. It was never talked about.
So they obviously, I was the first one you ever told, as you mentioned. Well, I can't, let me just stop right there. And as I'm sitting here as your son, the person who was born out of that, all I knew was, and all that we didn't really even talk about it. Maybe I put the pieces together. All I always knew was you were dating him. You got pregnant. He did the right thing and said, I have to marry her. And it was not a good marriage and it didn't last but a few years. And that was it. That's all I ever knew and all I ever assumed. Obviously, as we're finding out, there was something much darker about that. So you get married. What were those several? And my brother was born. So I have a full blood brother who lives in the DC area right now. But what were those few years of marriage like?
Total chaos and abuse. Mm. And I was never afraid that he was going to kill me or anything like that. But I was hit. I missed a lot of work. I was working at the time. I missed a lot of work because I couldn't sleep at night. I wasn't sleeping because of the horrible things that were going on. And swollen eyes from crying all the time, a couple of black eyes. Mm-hmm. And again, every time I went to my parents or went to my mother, I will say more about my mother, and wonderful person. Let me just say that.
Yeah.
She's a wonderful mother. Didn't know what to do either. And she just said, go to counseling. We don't have divorces in our family, which we did. Mm-hmm. But she said that. And I didn't think about that at the time, but we did. And you just have to keep the marriage together and you know, you just need to keep going to counseling. So there were two things that happened to me besides being, again, I'm not a victim. I don't want to be a victim. And I just took the abuse. And I worked and I took care of two kids. And people would say to me and probably wonder, why in the world did you have another child?
Yeah.
I had another child because I wanted another child because I didn't want to raise an only child. Mm. I thought, I'm in this forever. You know, I'm supposed to just do the right thing and be a better wife. You know, I'm doing something wrong here and I need to be a better wife because this is what the counselors were telling me. And they gave me all these suggestions how to be this better wife. And so I thought, if I'm going to be in this for the rest of my life, I don't want to have an only child. I'll have another child. And I don't know if I told you this or not ever, but I had three miscarriages.
I did not know that.
Yes.
I didn't know you had even one.
Yes. Three miscarriages before Mike was born.
Wow.
And in those days, you'll love this story. This is really great. Twice, I remember twice, the other time I just think it was at home, go to the hospital and they put your legs up so that you won't miscarry.
Mm.
Yeah, I'm laying in the hospital bed so you won't miscarry. Well, that didn't work too well. That didn't work too well. Twice they did that, but so we'll move along from that. But I mean, I crack up when I think about that now, but I do remember still not wanting that child yet. Still, I was glad. I was happy that they happened.
Yeah.
So, but yeah, Mike came along. He's a great guy. He's a great brother. Mm-hmm. You know that. Wonderful person, very successful in his own right. But then I decided through all the counseling, and please, I would say to everybody out there, if you have issues like this, go to counseling, but be aware of a good one and a bad one.
Yeah.
And you got to remember, I was still 21 years old, 22 years old.
With two kids.
Two kids. And I wouldn't have known a good one from a bad one, but I did kind of know that I wasn't getting anywhere with this. So I had a fourth counselor, and I can tell you what she had on. I can probably tell you her age. And she said to me, I do not know what is right for you or wrong for you. I don't know what you're going to do. But she said, only you can make that decision. And it was the first time in my life through, you know, having to go to a certain high school that my mom said, go to a certain college that my mom said, get married because my mom said. It was the first time that somebody said, you can make your own decision.
And it was a female. Had you had other female counselors before?
Okay. I had one male counselor.
Because I think that's key, that it was a female who could speak to you about that and go, you need to take power for yourself.
Yeah. And I know the faith is very important to you, Dave, and I did not have that or to fall back on that. But one of the counselors was a minister, and he was horrible.
Mm-hmm.
Absolutely horrible. But she said that to me, and she said, only you can make that decision. And within that same time frame, probably within a month or two, the person we're talking about here, he had gone back east because he wanted us to move east where his parents lived at the time, and he was going to get a job. And so he was working on his master's at the time, and he was going to go back and get a job, and we would live in Pennsylvania. Okay, so when he came back, and I think he was gone at least a week, maybe 2 weeks, and I was by myself, going to work, raising this little toddler guy, you, and then his little brother, who was not even 6 months old yet, taking him to the sitters, working, but it was so peaceful and so quiet. And I thought, I can't go back to that. I cannot go back to that. And with that in my head and the idea that somebody told me that I could make my own decision, and I did. And when you came back, and I said, I can't go on like this. We need to separate. I don't want this anymore. I have a really hard time with the R word that you said earlier and with the D word, divorce. Mm-hmm. I have a hard time saying that word. I've always used when we were separated.
Mm-hmm.
So we were separated, but took another step. And
So he
I got out of it after 5 years.
Okay. So let's fast forward just a little bit. Are we in Lawrence, Kansas at this point?
Yes.
When you said, goodbye, I'm done,
yes.
I'm out.
Yes.
Okay. And you're working, what are you doing at the time in Lawrence?
Actually, I was working on campus.
Oh, okay.
I was working
for the
on
school,
campus at KU.
For the university. Okay.
Yeah, for the university in the history department.
Okay. For all my fellow Mizzou alum, I will stop here and apologize that your Tiger here actually did live in Lawrence, on the campus of KU. All right. Not my fault, as you can tell. So a little levity here. But the person I consider my dad.
Yes.
This is where you met him.
Yes.
Right? How did that happen?
Yes. I worked in the history office there. And there were like maybe 15 or 20 people, women and guys, girls and guys, working on their masters, and they taught part-time there. And so he worked there, and that's how I knew him. We never went out. He would just, like all of them, he would just pass through the office. Hello, how are you? You know, that kind of thing. So one day I was, after the divorce, I was walking uptown in Lawrence and doing some shopping or something, and he was coming the other way, and he said, oh, hi. And he goes, I understand you either are getting a divorce, or you are divorced, or something like that. And I go, yeah, that's right, I am. And he goes, oh, well, did you want to go out sometime? Maybe we could go to a movie or something? I go, well, I guess I could, you know, but I intended on being single for a while, you know, I really did. And we were living in Lawrence, and I was bound and determined to go to the big city. I wanted to live in the big city. I was going to Kansas City. So I did. I got a job in Kansas City, and I was ready to move and everything. Well, it just so happened that he lived in Kansas City with his parents, and he was also teaching at Razorbacks.
Fayetteville,
Arkansas.
Yeah, right.
Yeah. So this was in the summertime. And so then he went back after the end of the summer, and we went out a few times, and he went back to teach, you know, at Fayetteville, and he would come home on the weekends, and we would go out and we had a great time and everything was wonderful. And so we had talked a little bit about getting married, and I thought, well, you know, he is, he's a wonderful person. He was a great dad to you two boys, and then my daughter Heather was born, and she's successful in her mm-hmm. own right too, so I can be really proud of my three children, that's for sure. And so we kind of had talked about the future, and we might get married in the future, but I definitely, and he knew it, well, I wasn't quite ready yet. Well, then May came along, or it was going to be May of that
of 67
year or something. Yeah, 67. And the lady where I was renting the house from decided she wanted her house back. And I'm like, okay, well, where should I move now? And so he said, well, we might as well just get married.
Why not?
I mean, yeah. Seemed like the thing to do. So I'm thinking in my mind, and I even said, I don't think I'm really ready. I don't really think I'm ready yet. And it goes, well, I don't think you want to move again. And so, we kind of were in that conversation. And so we did. We got married because, again, I'm thinking, okay, I thought a family, a good family, was children, a mom and a dad, and that's kind of the way I saw this. We'll have a mom and a dad, mm-hmm. and we'll have a couple of kids.
The two boys, and then
two boys, and later.
Well, I will say this, as I think, hearing how you tell this, and we can go ahead and call him Ted. Well, you know, that is his real first name. That's your second husband, person I consider my dad. But the fact that he wanted to marry someone with two kids already.
Oh, yeah.
That's a real turnoff to a lot of men, especially in their 20s. Yes. Like, she's a really nice woman, and yeah. I think maybe we could make something of a relationship, yeah. but yeah, the two young kids, not for me.
Yeah.
That didn't deter him.
No. So I would say I chose well.
Yes, you did.
I mean, I did. And I feel bad about that it didn't work out. I don't have regrets in my life. I feel badly for him, especially because that's what he wanted, and he wanted to go to counseling. It lasted for 10 years. So I do feel bad about that. But he has gone on to yes. remarry and happily ever after, and they never had any more children, but they traveled a lot. Mm-hmm. They both retired
right.
in the teaching end of it. I'm glad for that.
Right.
And you kept a relationship.
As in fact, of course, we're recording this literally on August 31st, and yep. I'm going to be seeing my dad.
Oh, yes.
This weekend. He does live out of state, and he's flying in.
Yes.
And so my sister, who is still here in St. Louis, we're going to spend a weekend with him. But I just want to briefly touch on this, though, on the 10 years of marriage.
Yeah.
Why didn't it work out? Because I, to this day, don't really know what happened. Other than, because there's no that I ever saw fighting, yelling, like, oh man, it doesn't surprise me they got divorced. I can't say that. I will say, and this was around 77-ish, 19, somewhere yeah. in there. I could tell things were starting to break apart a little bit, but again, it wasn't like this chaotic place that, man, I'm glad they're separated. So what do you remember about those end days
the
of
the last
that
couple of
marriage?
Years, probably. I just, it's a real hard one to answer because he was a very nice person. But I think I just sort of felt like there was more out there, that I wanted to have this feeling of just, being closer to somebody and something just different. Something was missing. And that's really all I can say. Mm-hmm. Even though he wanted to go to counseling, if we'd gone to counseling, would it have changed everything? I don't know. Did I still want to just work and be a single mother or be a single mom, be a single woman? I don't know. And it's very hard for me to answer. And people have asked me that very question, Dave, and I just don't know. Yeah. It just wasn't there, I guess, the feeling there that I felt should be with a husband and a wife.
Well, yeah, right. I will say that it took me decades to understand what the impact of that divorce had on me. Because when you're going through it, and I was only 15 or so at the time, and you can't really, you don't have the experience or the knowledge or anything, maturity at 15 to articulate what's happening. All I know is this. My freshman year in high school at Wentzville, and I was always a good student, right?
Yep.
I've seen the report cards. I had a 4.0, straight A student. You guys divorced, separate, and then I ended up graduating with a 2.67.
Well, I learned something today, too.
Wait a minute. What? Well, so that tells you that those last 3 years, sophomore, yeah. junior, senior,
yeah.
if that was the average, it went down. It took me a long time to put two and two together and go, oh, that divorce really impacted me. Because I was into sports, as you know, played sports. I stopped at that. My sophomore year, I was done. I checked out. I stayed home a lot. I stayed in my room. You had to do what you had to do because you were traveling with Ralston Purina at the time. As a salesperson. So it was basically the three kids, the three of us kind of raised ourselves there for a while. I'm shocked that none of us went down a bad path.
Oh, me.
We experimented with it. We tried a couple times, but just what typical teenagers might do. Nothing worse than that, because we really did. I mean, you just made sure we had the frozen pizzas and spaghetti boxes in the house, and then off you went on your sales trips.
Yep.
And we stayed at home by ourselves a lot. But you were going to say something.
No, that's right. And I didn't and I think because I was not a hands-on parent, mother, had no idea until you just said that your grades had plummeted. Because I wasn't really paying that much attention to what was going on. I was just trying to work and travel a little bit, like you said, with Ralston. So I'm shocked. So you're finding out things and I'm finding out things. But I always said, because my mother told me what to do, where to go, what to do, what I could become. I always said I will never do that to my children. And I always said whatever they want to be is going to be fine. But I kind of let them raise themselves and make their own decisions. And your brother, Michael, said to me one time, and I said, and look how you all turned out. I wouldn't, you know, it's hard to know, but you know the kids are not functioning properly. I mean, they can't without a mother and a father and a good, you know, background, faith-based and everything like that. But you don't realize how hard it is on them until you sit down and talk about it. And of course, as a family, we never did that, you know. So when I say that all three of my children have done very well in their chosen field, and Mike said to me one time, he said, yeah, Mom, but we could have gone the other way.
Yeah.
And that blew me away because I never thought that. I just never thought that way. Not when you were growing up and not now, not any time in my life. And that was just a couple of years ago he said that. And I'm like, oh, my gosh, I guess you could have.
I think about that all the time because I saw it happen. Well, Mike tried to burn half of Lake St. Louis down once.
But
that was. But
that's minor.
we
had the other half.
Yes, that's a whole other story. Okay, so we will get to your third marriage. Like, you're trying to be Elizabeth Taylor here, I think, but you stopped at three.
Yeah, I did.
Now, this is going to be, we've got some really serious things that we're going to get into eventually, but this is going to be more of the fun thing because of who you met. Because a lot of people are going to hear this name in St. Louis and go,
I know
who that is. I know that family. I know his brother. I used to go drinking beer with him. I mean, it's that kind of thing. So in the late 70s, 1980 or whatever, you met a gentleman by the name of Joe Gummersbach.
Yes, I did, but it was in the 80s. Yes,
it was in the early
80s.
Okay.
It was in the 80s, yeah.
Whose brother, Jim Gummersbach. And right now, people are already clicking in going, the Gummersbach family from South City, St. Mary's, all that.
Yeah,
that's
that would
it.
Be it.
You know, the Mike Shannon clan, they all
that
used to hang out together. So you meet Joe, you start dating, but did you think, oh, this is going to go somewhere or not?
No. I was just dating, and I don't know if I should say this or not, but we would go out to eat dinner or happy hour or something like that, and he would charge it off to the company that he worked for.
Oh, well, yeah, maybe then we shouldn't say the company. Because I know the company, they still exist.
Yeah,
although, what can they do about it now? This was over 40 years ago.
He retired after, 36 years? But anyway, that was kind of fun. But yeah, I mean, we would go out and everything like that. But I told him into it from probably day one and a few years after that, a couple years after that, I said, if you're looking to get remarried or to marry or anything like that, you better move on, because this is not going to be me. But we could just continue the relationship. And then we did eventually get married, I guess, 5 years later, something like that. Four. Yeah, whatever it was. And then we did get married. Now we've been married 38 years now.
That's amazing.
That is amazing, Dave. I like the way you say that. That's amazing.
Knowing you, which we'll dig into a little bit, that's, and I don't mean that in a bad way. Yeah, I'm just saying that's the reality of it. Yeah. It's just 38 years.
Yeah.
So when I think, obviously I know the answer to the first one is you were not in love, obviously. Second one, it doesn't sound to me that you would say that you were in love. It was can I dare say this was a marriage out of convenience for your second marriage? Or
I don't really like that word, convenience. It was more about what I thought a marriage is. This is a nice person.
Did you ever say, I love you to him?
I'm not going there, Dave. I don't say that to anybody.
You don't say that to anybody.
Nobody.
You've never said that to to Joe.
No.
You've never said that to anybody.
Cut. No.
Well,
I never heard it at home. It is very hard for me to say.
But I never heard it at home, and I say it. And your sister said, or my sister says it.
She does.
Right, but she never heard it at home.
No, she didn't, but she said, I'm not going to be like my mom.
Oh, okay. Well, there you go.
So there you go.
So I know you've never said it to me.
No.
And I know
you. But I do.
Well, but
you
can't.
I really like you a lot. You're special.
What am I supposed to do with that, folks?
Okay, moving on. But I don't, but as you know, I don't hug people. I don't give them a kiss. I don't hold hands with people. I feel very uncomfortable
but what
with that.
Okay, so let's explore that. What, I'm going to play like psychologist. I wish I had a counselor here, really, because I'm out of my expertise here, but this is really unbelievable to me. Are you afraid of tapping into certain emotions of what you might find there? I don't understand.
Okay, I'm going to stop you, and I'm going to tell you, two things. I'm afraid of being hurt. I don't want to be hurt. I've seen people hurt before, and I don't want to be hurt. A friend of mine, a number of years ago, probably 30 years ago, and Joe and I were already married, and she said to me, she said, if you knew that you were going to die in 2 weeks, let's say you knew you were going to die in 2 weeks, I mean, you weren't going to be sick or anything like that, but you knew you were going to die, what would you do? What would you do with your time and everything? And you know what my answer was? Oh, my gosh, I'd go back to Europe. Why not? Mm-hmm. I would go back to Europe. I would go to some place I haven't been before, and I would, you know, just enjoy my life. And she said, well, I knew you were going to say that. And I said, well, what would you say? And she said, I would pull my family together. I would be with my family. And I go, oh, oops.
Wrong. I guess I gave the wrong answer. Is that what you're saying?
I guess I gave the wrong answer. Yeah. And I know today, as I think about that today, it would be different, maybe because I can't get through an airport and have trouble walking on cobblestones in Italy. I don't know. But I would pull my family together now. It would be a different answer. But when I think about that, and I'm thinking, you know, that wasn't very nice. But we had this kind of discussion, she and I, about, well, don't you love deeply? Haven't you ever loved anybody deeply? And I said, no, not really, because, and I said to her, I'm afraid of being hurt. I don't want to get hurt. And she said, well, that's a shame because you will never experience what love can be like. Because she and her husband were very much in love.
Right.
He passed away. But Yeah, she had some good points there.
But I'll buy that to a certain degree. I'm going to push back on you just a little bit.
Okay.
I understand I don't want to be hurt, but I think everybody can say that. Nobody wants to be hurt. I wonder if there's something deeper going on that either you're afraid of certain emotions. You can be a demonstrative person. I think people are saying, oh, she's very articulate. You can tell she loves to talk. You're very social. You always have been. People love to be around you, all that stuff. But if you turn the mirror on yourself and you're forced to dig deep down, I can almost see you pulling back. Oh, I'm not going there. I don't want to know what's down there. I have no interest in digging down. It's messy. I would prefer not to go there. Or is it a genetic thing? If your mom wasn't demonstrative in love, was that passed to you? And if that's the case, you already had kind of nature you were battling as well, right?
I think to some degree. I think, again, but even today I can say I don't really want to get hurt, so I'm afraid to get too emotional. But I will tell you something that I thought a lot about and kind of has, I can't use bad words on here, but ticked me off a lot. When my parents died, and I never saw them hold hands. I never saw them kiss. I never did any of that. I have not talked to my sisters. Maybe they have. I didn't. But when we were going through, and my mom always said, well, you know, don't show them pictures of your traveling or whatever, because, you know, people are going to be bored with it. They're not going to want to see it and this kind of thing. And when I began to go through her stuff after she passed away, I was a little ticked off. Because I found tons of cards that she and mom, that my mom and dad had written to each other. Mm. I love you so much.
Wow.
I don't know what I could do without you. I'm, you know.
Are you saying when I open your box someday, I won't find those cards and letters too?
No, because I threw all my cards away. Even if they had that on there, you wouldn't have found that on there. But I never kept, I don't have cards. I don't keep cards.
Well, it doesn't sound like those cards would have said that anyway. That you
No, they
written.
Wouldn't have said that anyway. Right. No, they wouldn't have said that anyway. But the fact that she even made it sound like, well, I don't keep cards. We don't give cards. I never saw anybody giving cards or it just... You got some Christmas presents or a birthday present, and that was kind of it. I never saw any of this. I was in shock. And then I was going through other files, all of the emails, you know, because emails was starting back in the day. File cabinets of this stuff, of emails, and we just sent them back and forth, that she even kept these things and how important they were. I had no idea.
So it was private between your mom and dad, my grandparents.
Right.
Never made that known to you.
Right. And may I interject something really quick here? As you know, and I don't even know if we're going to have time to get into it, but I have a sister that was killed in a car wreck at the age of 17.
Well, I did want to talk about that, so let's address that.
Okay. Now, I didn't live at home anymore. I had already moved out of the house. So she was 8 years younger than I am, and I have another sister that's 10 years younger than I am. So those two sisters still lived at home. I was gone. You had
an older sister.
My kids. Yes.
Two of you were gone.
I have one older sister, and we were both gone. They both still lived at home. My mother, my youngest sister, the one that was 10 years younger than me, was at my house in St. Louis. Now, they still lived in Kansas. And she had come to visit me, and she was visiting me. My sister, Raynell, that was 8 years younger, was in a car accident. And my mom was on her way to see me and pick up my other sister. She was on the way to see me, and Raynell was killed in this car wreck. And
in McPherson, Kansas, right?
In McPherson, Kansas. Right. Yes, absolutely. McPherson, Kansas. And when mom got from McPherson, Kansas up to St. Louis, about a 7-8 hour drive at that time, I had to tell my mom that she had passed away. So we jumped in the car and we drove back another 8 hours. My dad was home alone without anybody. He knew within 30 minutes when the car wreck had happened. So it was very sad. When I live with this. I drove Mom back. I was parked in front of their house. Mom got out of the car. Dad was coming down the porch from the house. They met on the sidewalk and embraced. First time I ever saw that.
Yeah.
And the last.
Is that right?
Yeah. Yeah. And they hugged. And the first time I can ever remember touching my dad.
So I wonder if that's part of the hurt you're talking about. It's not a relate. Well, it is kind of relational, but not necessarily the husband boy. It's a family relational thing.
Yeah.
And there was hurt.
Right.
And you, I don't even know if you can answer this. Do you think you mentally shut down at that time? Like it was too much for you to handle.
Well, you know, maybe so, because I suspect throughout the funeral and the few days that I was there, I'm sure that they were probably entwined in each other a little bit at some point in time. I don't really know. I don't know.
Yeah. I remember that day, by the way.
Yes.
When I was only, what year was that? 68, 67?
67.
68.
No, 68.
Okay.
68.
So I'm five or six, depending on when that happened. Yeah. And then little Mike, my brother.
It was Father's Day.
Oh my gosh. I didn't know that.
Father's Day.
So it was a month before I turned six then.
Right.
But I remember Dad coming out and said, you and your brother go out. We had a little carport thing.
Yeah.
Because we were living in Pebble Lane.
On Pebble Lane.
In Hazelwood. Florissant. Pebble Lane. But we could see in to the kitchen and into the living room with the screen door. So we're out there. Once you say hi to Grandma, and it was her sister,
yes,
right? Seal.
Yes.
Once you say hi to them, you guys need to go out to the garage because we have something to talk to Grandma about. Oh, okay. So I'll never forget this. The things that get seared into your memory, even though I had no idea what it was all about, but I look through, you guys are talking and Grandma falls to her knees.
She did.
So I remember that right.
She did.
So I remember her falling to her knees and people kind of like gathering, talking a little bit. And I'm looking at Mike. Mike's probably off playing, doing something or whatever. And I'm just like, oh, that's kind of weird. They're playing some kind of game or something. I had no idea.
Yeah.
And then I have no more memories. I don't remember traveling back. I know I went to the funeral and all that. But I said something, by the way, I just thought about how is she going to get up?
Yes.
Yeah,
I was just getting ready. That's what I was going to say. Yeah. When we got to the funeral, and you guys stayed home, you didn't come till the next day because I was already taking my mom back. We didn't get back until 3 o'clock in the morning. Mm. And it was foggy out. We went through Salina and down to McPherson, and it was so foggy out. We were going about 25, 30 miles an hour. I couldn't get home fast enough, but I couldn't drive any faster. Mm. I was trying to get Mom home. And, yeah, then the next couple of days, and we had the funeral and everything. And we were at the gravesite. And, you know, the casket and the gravesite. And you came up to me and you said, how is she going to get out of there and get up there?
Oh.
Yeah. And being the religious kind of person that I am not, mm-hmm. I said, well, she doesn't really go. It's her soul. And I kind of knew enough to say something, and I guess you were okay with that.
Yeah, right.
Because that's all I said.
Probably should have known what that meant, but okay.
Yeah, I know, but it worked. And then I probably turned around and walked off because I didn't know what else to do, but yeah.
But it's interesting that I would say that because, and this is what I want to talk about now, is the faith-based religion thing. Because this is, as you already noted, this is very important to me and to my sister.
Yes.
We both attend the same church.
Yeah.
We were not a religious family.
Right.
Did not go to church.
No.
Never really discussed.
No.
I would consider our family agnostic, not really atheist, not like, well, we definitely know there's no God. It wasn't to that level. We just didn't talk about it. It was not an issue. No. We lived in kind of the middle of a Catholic neighborhood in Florissant, so we had all of our Catholic friends, and sometimes they would invite me to this thing called a fish fry on a Friday night. And I thought, this is a pretty cool little church thing. You get to eat all this free fish. This is really fun when I was a kid. Obviously didn't understand any of it. But when I went off to college, and we all think we're really smart at that age, we're figuring out the world, I knew there was no God. So I went from agnostic to atheist.
Oh.
And would even write papers in the philosophy class trying to disprove the existence of God, which is, of course, a silly exercise, but I attempted it. And this isn't about me and my conversion to know Jesus. That could be another episode someday. But as you know, it happened, right? And I'm a very faith-based, deeply religious Christian man, serve on the board of my church, very active, have gone on trips overseas, and you know all that. When you look from a distance at what your oldest son became, what do you think about that?
I think it's wonderful.
You do?
Oh, absolutely. I think it's wonderful. And I wish I could be there, but I'm just not there, and I don't know what it takes to get there. I think sometimes you have to start out in your younger days and grow up with it, and it is in the family. But that's not necessarily true because, as you know, my parents went to church every Sunday. We went with them. They went to church until they ended up in a nursing home. So it was very important to them as well. But it was not important to me, and I really didn't get anything out of it. In Sunday school or church, I loved the singing, but that was about it. And so when I got married, each time, including with Joe, who is Catholic, by the way, never went to church. So there was nothing in any of those marriages that would bring you or bring me and them, you know, to even say, hey, let's start going to church. That wasn't there, and it never became a part of my life. But I know both you and Heather are very faith-oriented, and you've raised your children that way. And Heather's two kids are very faith-oriented as well. My sisters, my older sister goes to church every single Sunday, and if she misses, it bothers her deeply, and she doesn't feel the same all week long. So I don't know. I guess I'm the black sheep of the family. I don't know.
So I've got a point-blank question on this matter, and if you're not comfortable in answering it, that's fine. But do you believe there is a creator? Do you believe, at least conceptually, that there can be God? Not a God, but God of the Bible.
Well, I think it's possible. I'm not like an atheist or anything. I just don't give much thought to it one way or another, but there are so many people out there like yourself, you know, that do believe, and so many Christians and call themselves Christians and that. And I think, yeah, it's possible.
But you've never wanted to investigate it. I'm going to take some time because, well, I'm told that my eternity might matter here. I mean, again, I'm not trying to put you on the spot here.
No, but
I'm curious.
If somebody said to me, there really is, and here's the proof, and it's just not the Bible, but here's the proof, and a couple people came back and told me, so you better get with it, I'd probably get with it, you know? So I guess I wouldn't say there's just no way. I wouldn't sit down and talk to somebody about it. You know, actually, I tried that a couple of times.
You did.
I went to a church here. I don't even know if I should mention it or not. It doesn't matter, but I did. And I liked it. And I actually, you don't know this, I actually went once a week and sat down with the minister, and we started reading the Bible together.
What?
I know. See, a lot of people don't know a lot of things about me. Well, they're going to find out today, and you just found out something.
About how long ago was that?
Well, Joe and I were married.
Okay.
You know, I mean, I'm going to say 30 years ago, maybe.
Okay, so
it's been a long time.
But it didn't stick with you, apparently.
No, it didn't. It didn't stick with me, and I don't know if I just it wasn't sticking, but I just kind of moved on or got tired of getting up on Sunday. I don't really know.
Well, I am convinced, and we don't need to belabor the point, but because I'm proof of this, that God, I am just convinced of it, is always tapping us on the shoulder, especially for non-believers, because He wants all of His children to come home eventually. In eternity. That's what He created us for. I'm convinced of it. I've experienced it. I've seen it. And so He had to basically destroy me in so many ways. You know, kind of what I went through in the early 80s and in my last part of college. And we don't need to go into all that. But I was basically stripped of everything. I had nothing. I didn't have my health. I had no family. I had no money. The one girlfriend I had dumped me. And so I'm living out of my Ford LTD at the time, and I went from an atheist to a full believing Christian almost overnight. I had my road to Damascus. And to think that God never gave up on me, even though I wrote papers in college about His non-existence and I mocked Him, He wasn't done with me. So I say that I know He's tapping on your shoulder. But something is, it's like you haven't turned. Well, you did 30 years ago. Okay, well, I'm noticing something.
Yeah.
So I'm going to leave it at that. I'm saying that God's not done with you and just continue to listen.
Well, I will, but I will bring up 2 points on that. And I think about this too. When my sister died, okay, my mother, who is, you know, of her faith, and she has said, many, many times, it was their faith that got them through. Mm-hmm. It truly was. And for weeks, talk about your shoulder. For weeks, she always felt this heavy thing on her shoulder, always something. And she felt that it was Raynell. And, you know, God, Raynell, whatever it was. And finally, she said, I couldn't take it anymore. I just couldn't take it anymore. And she turned and she said, it's okay. Go to heaven. Whoa. It's okay. And I said, oh, my gosh, you did? And she said, it was gone.
Wow.
It was gone.
I believe that that happened.
I
don't think it was just something in her mind.
In McPherson, when we lived in McPherson, and I had gone home, took Mom back to the house, you know, back home and everything. And I slept, and Chris would have been however old she was at that time. 15, I guess, and a couple aunts had come and stuff, but Chris and I had to sleep in the same bed, and I'm not sure if we were in Raynell's bed or Chris's bed, but she and I were in the same bed, and I didn't know this until a couple of years ago when we were talking about it. We went back and visited the house, and so Chris was starting to tell me some stories, and she said, well, remember when you came to McPherson after Raynell died and we were sleeping together in the same bed? And I go, no, I didn't remember that we slept together in the same bed. And she said, yeah, you do, because it was moving.
Oh, geez.
And I said, no, I don't remember that at all. And she said, Karen, it kept moving. Every night it kept moving. I'm like, okay, then. So there you go.
So who knows? I mean, this is getting into the real spiritual realm. And we can't know. We cannot know with any certainty. I don't know what went on that particular time. Right. But it's just things like that that I just know there's something there. There is an afterlife. There's an eternity.
Yeah.
I don't know. Do you sit here for a while and then you go on and someone has to release you?
Yeah.
It boggles the mind. But I just know it to be true. Okay. Completely changing gears. This is one of the things... You mentioned right at the beginning, RA, rheumatoid arthritis. A lot of people watching right now, I'm sure, suffer from it, or they have someone very close to them who does.
Right.
This started as a very, you were young, right?
About 35, 36. I probably had it for maybe a year before I was diagnosed with it. And the first doctor I went to gave me Xanax. Okay. Said it was all in my head. That didn't work so well, but I finally got diagnosed properly. And I was working at Ralston, and I had to leave Ralston after 6 years because I could no longer do the store sets. And I used to be able to lift 25 pounds of dog food, do these store sets. I used to lift my 22 ounces of cat chow with one hand, throw it all over the place. And when I left after 6 years, and you kind of brought this up in your interview today on KMOX about how people are downsizing everything, and they had downsized cat chow and meow mix down to 18 ounces or whatever. And when I could lift these cat chow boxes like that, I couldn't even lift one 18 ounce with both hands. And it takes a toll on your body. And yeah, it's really bad. But again, I don't see myself as a victim. I just had to learn to deal with it and to go on. And it was probably 20 or 20 some years later that I got the right medication for it. And now, for the last 20 plus years, I've been taking infusions, which saved my life. But they didn't exist in the beginning. So I've had 3 joint replacements.
I was going to ask you, so what were you not born with that's in your body right
well,
now?
Well, I have 2 new knees. They're not so new anymore. One's 25 years old, and the other one's a little bit newer than that. But yeah, I had my first knee replacement 25 years ago. And then I had another one, and I have a shoulder, a total shoulder replacement. And last October, as you know, I had my left foot totally rebuilt, not a replacement. They couldn't even do that anymore. It's so far gone. So I have pins and needles and rods and, you know, everything that you want to say in there so that I could walk again because it was getting so painful and to struggle. But, you know, I just lived through it. I just lived through it because I try to have a positive attitude. So I have a really hard time when people come up to me and you say, well, you know, I have RA. And they go, oh, yeah, my little finger hurts, you know, and I just feel so bad. Well, you know, you don't have crippled up hands like I do, and you don't have all these joint replacements in your body like I do, but and to lose a good job over it too. But I have gone on, and I am.
Is there any bitterness at life, what it dealt you?
No.
Like, this is not fair.
No. I didn't when I was diagnosed. I didn't when I lost my job. I didn't. And they offered me an office job, but I didn't. I didn't take it. But no, I never have. I never look back. And the more, as I age even more, and I think, you know what? It made me who I am. I don't identify myself with a person that has a RA. I don't, but it makes me stronger and it makes me who I am.
Well, I've never heard you complain about it in terms of, I can't believe this, life is so hard. So when you kind of mentioned this, it's got to get under your skin when people go through life, and it may not even be physical. It's, I lost my job, and and that's a bad thing. I've lost my job before. You've lost your job. I'm not diminishing or demeaning that whatsoever. Right. But we, as humans, tend to complain when things don't go our way. And you must sit back and go, if you only knew. And I don't want to hear it. Right?
No, that's exactly right. And you had David Hawkins, I believe.
Yes.
As one of your guests.
Yeah, pastor from the east side. Yep.
Yeah, and one of the things that he said is, I'm not a victim. And a quote that he made, something about a victimhood, something about victimhood is a choice.
Yes.
He said something like that. Victimhood is a choice. Well, I choose not to be a victim, and I never felt that way. But while we're on the subject, and please get diagnosed, please get help, because there's a lot of help out there now, which I did not get, of course, the first, 20 some years. And I think when I guess one of the worst parts about it is, of course, the pain all the time. But one of the worst parts about it is when I got my handicap sticker, and I want to point this out right now, and I'm going to get into this. Be careful, because you don't know who's parked in that handicapped spot. And in my younger days, when I looked even younger than I do now, But I had the disease and I could barely walk. And before any of my joint replacements, I could barely drive a car. And I had to put an extra thing to even be able to shift the car and all this kind of stuff.
That, yeah.
Yeah. And I have had my car keyed. I've had notes left on my windshield. I've had people yell at me out the window when I couldn't even hardly walk. And I had to get into the store, do the grocery shopping, you know.
Did you have the handicap decal or sticker?
I had the handicap.
And they were still
doing that? And I would park in the handicap. But when you get out.
And you look like you're 35. Okay, got it.
Perfectly normal.
Yeah.
They don't know what you're going through. And my deal is this. What I would like to say to people is, you don't know what's wrong with that person. And if you get angry with them and you yell at them or you know, leave a note in their windshield, for goodness sakes, or even, and I saw the guy, you know.
Oh, key your car. Ooh.
Key my car. Yeah. But if somebody's in that handicapped spot and they don't belong there, they're already a jerk. So anything that you could say or do to them is not going to matter. It's not going to matter. So you need to just pick yourself up and go on and live your life that day and be happy, okay? Because you don't know what they're going through. But when you go through what I was living through and how bad it is, and somebody does that to you, do you know what that does to that person? You want to sit there and cry. And then you get a little more depressed. Hmm. And I'm not really a person that gets depressed a lot, but you feel like that. And the emotions within you are awful. So please, just
move on.
It shouldn't be there, but move on. Just move on.
Well, I'm glad you said that. That's a great point. I actually have never thought about that because I'm one of those people who will give the evil eye, and it's to where they don't. It's only when they don't have the thing hanging from the rearview mirror.
Yeah.
And I look at it, this is a young person, and they just sit there, and then they get out, and they're perfectly fine.
Yeah.
Now, to your point, they might have something, but they also might be going to pick up their elderly mother and need to come up. And I never really thought about that before because I get upset because of you. And I think, my mom could need that spot.
Yeah.
And you, Mr. Jerk, just park there and I'm going to give you the evil eye and let you know, I know, I see you. Now, in today's world, that's probably not very safe.
Yeah.
wouldn't be road rage there because we're sitting, but rage regardless.
Yeah.
That's an interesting take.
Yeah. Just go about your life and be happy, you know. And you're not going to keep that person from doing it again. You know, you're not.
You know, I think I have the timing wrong. Again, we're learning stuff here together. I thought your arthritis was kicked into gear by your very severe, almost fatal car wreck.
No.
That happened after you already had arthritis then. Is that right? Okay.
Yeah.
I don't know why I thought that. Give me the details about that car crash.
Well, I was at Ralston and I was working and I was in one of my stores. And so this was like 3 o'clock in the afternoon and I was leaving one store to go to another one. This was in St. Charles, going over that old bridge into Earth City. There used to be,
I guess
the old bridge is still there. I don't
even
know.
There, right.
And I was leaving one store and I was going to go to another store and I was going over the old bridge and I saw this car coming at me in the wrong lane. And right there at that time anyway, it was like four lanes, two going each way. And I saw him coming at me and I moved over to get out of the lane that he seemed to want to take. And somehow the police told me later that he probably saw me move, which made him move back over. And that's why I got hit head on by a drunk driver. And that's why I like to say he was a drunk driver because it was 3 o'clock in the afternoon. They knew he was absolutely drunk and he was. That was before seatbelts.
So you did not have your seatbelt on?
Did not have my seatbelt on.
Did you get ejected?
Did not get ejected, but of course the whole front was all smashed in and everything like that. And I often wonder sometimes if it didn't aggravate my shoulder because my shoulder went up and hit the windshield. And
yeah, because that's such an impactful thing. If you already have the arthritis, that couldn't have helped it. It might have exacerbated it.
And that's what I have always wondered, But it was my right arm and I went up that way. But that's okay. I mean, it just happened. And I had a little scar on the right side. Well, it was kind of a big scar on the right side of my face, but they stitched me all back together. You know, a little piece of my ear is gone, you know, but hey, it is what it is. Yeah. I lived through all that.
Yeah,
you
do. I mean, so now that you're in your 80s, and I don't know if you're going to live to be 105 or 81.
Yeah.
I mean, we don't know.
We don't know.
We don't know.
No, we don't know.
As you look back in your life, because we haven't hardly covered 10% of it, but we've kind of hit the highlights, right?
Yeah,
there's so much more to tell about our life in England and the Colin Firth story and all that. You know, well, maybe another time we'll have you on and talk about some of the other stuff as we've kind of hit the highlights, so to speak. But when you look back at your 80 years, what are your most pleasant memories? The time in your life when you say, you know what? That might have been about the best time of my life, was when?
I probably should say when my children were born and I raised
my
children.
And that's a wrap, everybody.
Yeah, but we already been there, done that. No, I have always enjoyed traveling. I do. And but I do that with my sister, my younger sister that's 10 years younger than me, and we will go. Joe doesn't particularly like to travel and that kind of thing, so that I always enjoy, and we've gone out of the country a few times.
What's your favorite place you visited?
Santorini, Greece, and Italy, and I've been to, were you by the rugs? Turkey?
Yeah, you went to Turkey,
Istanbul.
Right? Oh, yeah, sure.
Istanbul.
Yeah, in Turkey.
Yeah,
right.
Yeah, so I've done all that and of course, been places. I mean, you and I just got back from New Mexico. That was fun. Celebrated some birthdays we did. So, yeah, I think traveling, I think I like to go places. Yeah. And
well, yeah. I think this, to let people know sort of the context of this, the trip we took to New Mexico, this shouldn't probably surprise too many people, but that was not normal for us because we are not a close-knit family. I think people have figured that out, that my brother was there, your sister and her husband, me, you, my brother's longtime girlfriend. We had never really done that before.
No.
Ever.
Never.
Family members getting together.
No.
Like that. So here's the weird thing about that. People have asked me this when they go, well, Dave, are you that close to your mother? And I said, it's not a traditional mom-son relationship. It just isn't.
Yeah.
And I don't know how to articulate that any more than that. Well, how about your siblings? I saw my brother a couple years ago, which I've said before. Yeah. Well, what about your sister? You know, even though she lives 10 minutes away, I talked to her in July. And I'm like, what kind of family were you raised in? But here's the weird thing. People assume, oh, there's a lot of animosity.
Oh.
Somebody had a falling out. And the answer is that's not the case. There is no animosity. No. There's no falling out.
No.
There's no, well, I haven't talked to him because of something he said to my wife and I never forget. It's never happened.
No.
That blows people away.
Yep.
So it's like, okay, you don't have any dislike for one another. There's no real expressive love for one another. It's just this family that kind of existed. And is that a fair way to put it? I don't know how else to explain relationally our family.
Well, I hate to say we just existed. That's kind of how we just existed, but maybe in a way it is. I mean, that's kind of the way that I grew up differently in that we did get together on Thanksgiving and Christmas. We did. We always did that. But basically that was about it. And I was never really that close to my older sister.
Yeah.
I'm still not. And my younger sister, I left home and, you know, then she was killed. But my younger sister, that's 10 years younger, we have really come into being friends and traveling together.
That's great.
We text every single day. Mm. So we're a little bit closer in that respect. But as far as that, we never went on family vacations. We never did anything together. So that was the same way, I think, when you grew up. We went to Florida and watched one of the space stations.
Yeah, that was pretty cool. Yep.
We did. But that was about it.
That was
probably
it.
Probably because maybe we didn't have a lot of money, you know, mm-hmm. so you just didn't take vacations and stuff. But then I think as we all grew up and your mother's over here going through all these marriages or whatever, she's kind of busy and working. And then we all got busy in our own way. And that's what I would say. We made friends. We have a lot of friends.
Yes.
You know, I know you do. I know that I do. Outside of our family. And I think that sort of keeps us busy as well.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, Mike lives off in D.C., Virginia area. And so that is a little harder. And Heather's busy. She was, she was a single mom.
Mm-hmm.
Raising her two children and working all the time. And
they're doing great.
And
the kids are doing great.
And they're doing wonderful.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that's part of it. You know, I think you find time for that, but we just didn't.
You know, the first time I ever heard someone say, I love you, I was 22 years old. Again, that blows people away. What? And it was my first girlfriend. You remember her, Lynn. So you said that you are afraid of getting hurt. Okay. I think I adopted that in some way that I didn't realize because I never had a girlfriend ever until I graduated from college. So I graduated from Mizzou in May of 84. Even by then, I had never had a girlfriend. I didn't even like to date that much. I didn't. Women scared me a little bit.
Oh.
And maybe it was from you.
Ooh.
I don't know. But I didn't feel comfortable.
Ooh.
Around women. I like women, but I didn't feel comfortable in getting too close to them. So I date this girl, Lynn, and it was head over heels. And then one night, and we'd only been dating maybe a few weeks, she says, Dave, I love you. And I remember going, it was visceral feeling, but in a good way.
Mm-hmm.
Like, I've never heard anyone tell me that before. So I fell head over heels in love. And then a few months later, she dumped me.
Yeah.
So I'm like, see, I had a right to not trust you women.
Yeah.
See what you did? And then I meet Susan.
Yeah.
We just celebrated year number 35.
But
here's the thing that I noticed when I visited her family for the first couple of times. It was Leave It to Beaver.
Oh, boy.
It was mm-hmm. this perfect, idyllic mm-hmm. family mm-hmm. that I always envisioned that's the way it's kind of supposed to be.
Yeah.
But here's the weird thing about that. I didn't feel comfortable in it.
Oh.
I didn't trust it.
Oh.
Can you believe that? I just thought, okay, what's the game here?
Yeah.
They're really tight. They're close. Yeah. There's I love you.
Yeah.
Even the brother saying that to his sister?
Yeah.
And mom and dad, and so it took me a long time. And so, yes, Susan was the first to say it to me, I love you. And I thought, okay, here we go again.
Yeah.
True story, and I don't know if I told you this.
Uh-oh.
When we were getting very serious, this was probably about 1987 or so, and we were actually talking about the possibility of marriage, and I told her, and I was serious as a heart attack, this was no joke, I said, well, I just want you to know, if you really want to go through this marriage thing, we will get divorced. Because the marriage probably won't even last 5 years, because that's how we do it in my family. So if you're okay with that. When I tell that story to people in front of Susan, they look at her and she just kind of, because she remembers it very well.
Yeah. Oh.
And they look at her and go, you married him? He warned you.
She's and the like, car you were driving too. And you were driving a
69 Ford LTD with the back seats ripped out.
Yeah.
Not making a lot of money in the media at the time.
Right.
Someone who says, I know we'll get divorced. She looks at my family and says, that's a dysfunctional family. Where do I sign up?
Exactly.
What the heck was she thinking?
I don't know.
Well, she saw something that I didn't see, obviously.
I guess so.
But yeah, that was so, I've just been in love those two times.
Yeah.
But I just remember that first time. It was so overwhelming to me.
Yeah.
And even to this day, even mm-hmm. though I've been coached well by my uh-huh. wife and mm-hmm. her family and all that, it still is not a comfortable thing.
Yeah.
I'm not the lovey-dovey guy. I'm very sociable too.
Yeah.
As we both are. But I've learned, and I do believe we all have it in us.
Yeah.
There is a core of love in all of us.
Yeah.
God has planted us,
yeah.
planted that in us. I can't answer for you maybe why yours is just really covered up. It's there. It's there.
Yeah, yeah, probably so.
For me, it's there. It's a little bit more covered up. Then there's my wife and her family. It's like, there's nothing covered up there. It's it's out there. So anything that you want to comment on that? I was kind of bloviating there for a while. But
no, I know. I know where you're coming from, absolutely. And with somebody as much faith as you have inside of you, then I think the love is there too, yeah. because that's, you know.
Yeah. So, yeah. I told you this beforehand that I was going to ask you what your happiest times were, and you mentioned travel. I may know the answer to this, but I'll answer it anyway. When yeah. you look back at your 80 years, what was the toughest time?
Yeah, that 5 years.
Yeah, I figured.
Absolutely the worst, mm-hmm. you know. So mm-hmm. that's easy. But I don't go back there. I don't go back there in my mind a lot.
Yeah.
I've tried to shut all that out. Yeah.
Well, I want to thank you for doing this, and I want to close with this, and I want you to answer this. And I didn't prep you with this, so you Uh-oh. May have to think about it Uh-oh. For a second. But I think some people will look at this and go, what was the purpose of this? I think that's a small number. I think a lot of people will find this story, I think, compelling and go, wow, that's very interesting. Boy, there are a lot of families that go through this stuff, and people are going to raise their hand and say, yep, I know what you guys are going through because that's kind of my family. But some will be saying, why is his mom doing this? Now, you talked about at the beginning that the Me Too movement got you on the rape and the abuse and all that. But just sitting down, and for someone who is closed with their emotion, you wouldn't know that by you sitting down here and opening up. So is this cathartic to you, for you? Do you feel better doing this? I'm curious to know why.
No, I don't feel any different than when I walked in here the day you asked me, because that's kind of who I am. As you know, I'm very, any of my friends that watch this are going to be blown away and shocked because they don't know any of this.
What do you think they'll be most shocked about, of anything that you said?
My first marriage.
Oh, that's, well, I didn't even, of course. Yeah. I keep forgetting you're going public for the first time.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. That will. But you asked me to do it, and I like to do fun things. And I thought,
this is fun.
This will be fun. Okay. This will be fun to do. You said, I don't know where we'll go with this, you know, what road we'll take. And that's fine. And I thought, well, the worst thing that could happen is that at the end, when we're done and we look back on it, I can say, this podcast is not airing. We are not going to do this. But I like to try new things and do new things. And that's what I'm doing. You asked me, and I thought, yeah, this will be fun. To say that it helped me mentally in some way like that and stuff like that, no. It is what it is. And we had a good time doing it, mm-hmm. and I hope people enjoy it. Mm-hmm. Shoot fire. Maybe I'll come back, and we'll finish up the Colin Firth story.
Oh, that's a good little
tease.
Where
you actually slept in his bed.
Okay, we now, can't leave
not,
it with that.
He was not there.
Okay, thank you. Just the real quick, when we lived in England in the early 70s,
yes.
that was one of my best times of my life.
Oh, okay.
I was in fifth grade there, and I remember it very well. But isn't that weird that who knew?
Yeah.
It was an exchange program.
Yeah.
Dad taught college in replacement of a English professor who then came over and taught Dad's classes at Flow Valley, Forest Valley Community College, and it was the Firth family.
Yes.
And they had this son named Colin, who went to Hazelwood West Junior High for 1 year while they were there. I attended his classes over there. And then my dad calls me in the mid-80s and said, you might want to turn on PBS. And I think it was Masterpiece Theater or something. And I said, why would I do that? And he said, Colin Firth is in the show. Colin Firth of... And Dad had stayed in contact with the family.
Yeah.
I had not. Yeah. And Dad continued to stay in contact with the Firth family for many, many years.
Yeah.
Colin Firth even came back to St. Louis.
Yeah.
And met up with Dad, and they went back to Hazelwood West to walk through. That didn't go as well. that's another story. So he's been back since he even, you know, was a well-known actor. So it's been great over the years to watch this Academy yes. Award-winning actor and know, to your point,
yes.
he slept in my bed.
Yep.
I slept in his bed, but we were separate. All right.
Yeah.
So you have to have good memories of that too, I think. But I think part, if I remember right, you also couldn't wait to get back home. Right?
Right. Because your dad wanted to stay there another year or whatever and this and that. But no, I wanted to come back. I just wanted to come home.
Yeah.
If I had it to do all over again now, I'd probably stay a few years. I don't know.
I
kind of liked Europe once I started going back. But no, it was just a different time in my life. And I wanted to get back home and we did. Yeah.
Got it.
Yeah.
Anything? I've never had a guest, by the way, bring notes. You brought some notes.
I did bring some notes.
Before we sign off here, is there any particular thing that you would like to say?
I think I actually kind of covered it in there.
All right.
Yeah.
I think we're good. We'll come up with some more things for the next episode.
Well, if you get enough hits, I guess we will, huh?
You speak like you know the lingo here. I'm proud. The views, the hits, the eyeballs.
I wanted to be a movie star or a stewardess.
You did?
We have so much data.
There's more. A movie star or a stewardess.
And my mom said I could be neither. No, she said I had to be a school teacher. But instead of a school teacher, I became a dog food salesman.
Yes, yeah.
I did.
Yeah, you did.
Yeah, so,
and a real estate agent for a while out in Lake St. Louis.
Yeah, for a little while. Yeah. So I've done a few things in my life.
A movie star. See, you and I have that same star quality because, as you know, I would come back as a rock star.
Well, there you go.
I want to be Kevin Cronin of REO Speedwagon.
Ooh.
That big hair that he had back in the 70s.
Yeah.
And when I saw them when I was 17 and I'm looking at him and Gary Richrath, the guitar player, and REO, and I'm looking at this Kevin Cronin with this big hair and all the girls going wild. I'm like, I want to be him.
Yeah.
But I found out I love music, but I have no music talent ability or any ability to sing.
Oh.
Other than that, I could have made it.
You could have made it, yeah. Well, I was going to be Carol Burnett.
Oh, that would have been good.
I know.
I love Carol Burnett.
I do, too.
Did you watch the documentary that was
out
on
her? I didn't think it was very good. Can I say that?
Oh, absolutely.
Yeah, I just didn't
think
it was.
What was missing for you?
I think who she really was. It was just people kind of just talking about her more. And I thought it missed a lot of stuff.
See, I felt the same way.
Yeah.
I was expecting more. Same with the Mary Tyler Moore special. I don't know if you saw that.
Just,
That didn't come off well for me either.
So much better, both of them.
Well, hopefully no one's saying that about this episode.
Oh!
You know, it could have been so much better with his mom. You know, I'm really disappointed. I don't know. We'll see. Anyway, mother, thank you.
Thank you, son.
All right.
It's been a pleasure.
Thank you. We'll see you next time. Thank you so much for listening, and please forward the link to this podcast to friends, family, neighbors, even strangers. They'll thank you later. Dave Simons, that would be me, is a certified financial planner and founder of Simons Cordes Wealth Management, headquartered in St. Louis but serving clients across the country. We'll talk to you again soon on another edition of Simons Says.